Okay, welcome to Coach Sappho's live podcast. Tonight is February 13th, 2008. Coach Sappho's live podcast is a 60-minute program brought to you weekly via teleconference and on the World Wide Web. And my name is Barb Elgin. I'm the founder and host of this podcast. It's the focus of Coach Sappho's live podcast to bring you live, lively talk about lesbian dating, mating, and relating. I'm glad you've chosen to join me this evening because we have on the call a very special guest, Mr. Evan Wolfson. In fact, I know you'll agree we couldn't have a more perfect guest for Valentine's Day Eve. Evan's the Executive Director of Freedom to Marry, the gay and non-gay partnership working to win marriage equality nationwide. Evan's been deeply involved in the fight for marriage equality for over a quarter of a century. Now, how's that for commitment? Called a formidable legal thinker and brilliant civil rights litigator, and with many fine accomplishments, of which here are a few. Evan was involved as co-counsel on the historic Hawaii marriage case. He also started he's also in the Peace Corps in West Africa. He worked as a state prosecutor and special counsel in the Iran-Contra investigation. And, of course, he appeared before the Supreme Court in Boy Scouts of America versus James Dale. I'm sure most of you remember that. Mm-hmm. And Time magazine in 2004 named him one of the Time magazine 100 top most influential people in the world. In addition, Evan has written a book, Why Marriage Matters, America, Equality, and Gay People's Right to Marry. So I invited Evan for this special Valentine's podcast because I truly believe the missions of Coach Sappho and Freedom to Marry intersect. And I also invited him because I've been watching him for quite a long time now, and I've been so impressed with his way of talking about the issue of marriage equality. He seems to have this way of putting it all into a perspective that is really positive and hopeful. Similarly, Coach Sappho is a healthy, positive, hopeful place for lesbian women allies to come to explore the subject of love, and in particular gain support for making our love lives all we want them to be. I, of course, as a relationship coach, talk a lot about the psychological and social aspects of our relationships, you know, things like dating, communication between partners, deepening our connections as partners, and much, much more. But it's also very important, and an important part of our mission here at Coach Sappho, to make all our clients aware of all the aspects of successful relationships. Issues such as whether or not to set up a relationship agreement, for example, or what is a relationship agreement, how to handle our finances, whether we're single or in a relationship, as well as understanding all of the rights we don't get to share with our loved ones and what we need to do to protect our unions in our own eyes, given most states choose to ignore them. And in unison with that, I'm sure Evan is about to share with you, we believe here at Coach Sappho that marriage is a very important issue for us to consider as lesbian women, single or coupled. What I'm going to do is start off by asking Evan some questions, then here and there I'll stop and ask you, the listeners, if you would like to ask some questions or comments. And eventually, if there's time, I'm going to go ahead and open it up full speed ahead here and for discussion for as many comments and questions as we have time for. So welcome, Evan. I just really want to thank you for joining us on the call tonight.
Yeah, it's my pleasure, and happy Freedom to Marry Week to you and to everybody.
Wow, that's, same to you. What's it like at Freedom to Marry this time of year since it's Freedom to Marry Week?
It's actually been very exciting. The whole team has been working really hard over the last couple months, reaching out to partners around the country, gay and non-gay organizations, as well as individuals, and developing toolkits, resources, sharing ideas from state to state, and urging the media also to pay attention to this in order to use this opportunity to prompt the conversations that we actually want to have 52 weeks a year, but that this gives us a chance, a hook, a gimmick, an opportunity to encourage people to really do. And we've seen, I think this year my team tells me there's been a record number of actions and events around the country. We're definitely seeing good press coverage, a lot of blog commentary, and a lot of it is role modeling what we really all need to do every day of the week, every week of the year, until we end this discrimination.
Wow, that's right. Well, when did you start Freedom to Marry, and what inspired you to do this?
Well, Freedom to Marry as an organization began in January of 2003, but it built on a lot of work that many of the gay and non-gay national, state, and local organizations had been doing for at least a decade before that. I used to work at Lambda Legal, and while there, I headed what was called the Marriage Project, and there we worked with organizations around the country. The reason I created Freedom to Marry as an organization was that after years of the work and the cases and the battles, we finally did succeed in getting Americans to put the words lesbian and gay and marriage in the same sentence. And that was a big change historically. It's kind of hard to remember that now. But not so long ago, most people thought the whole idea of two women being legally married just to be something that would never happen. And so we worked really hard throughout the 90s to achieve gains. We had the Hawaii case, which really cracked open the national discussion and moved things forward. But it didn't go all the way because our opponents were able to amend the Constitution in Hawaii and block the courts from finishing the job, even though we were winning. And then we had the Vermont case, which also was very promising and came very, very close, but didn't quite get all the way. We were able to win for the first time ever in the history of the world something called civil union, which in essence is gay marriage, not marriage itself, but a parallel kind of institution, separate and unequal, but in the direction of marriage just for same-sex couples. And so with all these accomplishments, I felt like it was time to step back and think about how might we, in the next chapter of the struggle, be able to really finish the job that we had begun so well but hadn't quite yet attained. And I was given a grant and an opportunity to develop a new mechanism, and thus was born Freedom to Marry, building on the work and the partnerships that had led us to the brink of marriage with Hawaii and Vermont.
Yeah, you know, and it's reminded me, you said that it wasn't too many years ago that we couldn't even say the words. And what's the name of that book where they had, you know, that was that thing of the future, and it would be, you know, same-sex, in this case, gay couples getting married, and like it was like, ooh, like Twilight Zone or something, you know?
Right, yes.
You know,
well,
that's how it was looked at.
Oh, absolutely. And, you know, again, it's just because of the amazing progress our movement has made in a very short period of time, it's really hard to remember that. But, you know, just 5 years ago, gay people were not able to get married in the United States or in for that matter, in North America. It was only 5 years ago this coming summer that we began to tear down that wall, first with the victory in Canada, then with the victory in Massachusetts. And, of course, we've had just tremendous momentum ever since, although we have not yet gotten the next state that shimmers within reach but is not yet quite there. And that's the main task of the work this year. Wherever we live around the country, we each need to do our part so that we can get that second state. Because once you get the second state, you get the third, fourth, and the fifth state. And then you begin getting a critical mass, and you have people beginning to see this with their own eyes as something good, something that helps families, doesn't hurt anyone. And with the momentum toward bringing young people in, the generational shift, the continuing growth in public education, and then more and more states going in our direction, that's how we're going to win.
Wow. So, and you said that if you could, you know, I'm just wondering, that's, you know, you really feel that we're in a really, and it's not really a backlash right now. I mean, I think a lot of people are feeling that things have regressed or, you know, it's pretty hopeless right now. I mean, what do you say to those people? How do you help them keep hope and keep the faith?
Well, in my book, Why Marriage Matters, I actually quote Martin Luther King, and I'll paraphrase it now. He said, "I hate the word backlash. Backlash falsely conveys the idea that America was just about ready to do the right thing, but then the pesky civil rights people went too far and people reacted." And he said, that's not at all what's happening. What's happening is there are two very different visions of how our country ought to be that are contesting. And some people believe in an America that has inclusion and equality and justice for all, and other people have a very different agenda and are fighting hard to preserve it. And so I don't really think we've ever had a backlash. What we've had is discrimination. We step up, we challenge that, we tell our stories, we break the silence, we begin recruiting allies. The opponents of equality fight back, and there's a fight. And the fight takes place certainly over many years, sometimes over decades. And that's what you have to live through in order to make a civil rights advance. Having said all of that, I would also say we are clearly winning. We are winning this fight. Now, you're not going to win it overnight, and you're not going to win it smoothly and evenly in every place. The classic pattern of advance in civil rights history is what I call in my book patchwork. And during these patchwork civil rights struggles, some states move toward equality faster than others, while others resist or even get worse before they get better. And that's always been the pattern of civil rights advance, whether it was for the struggles for racial justice, the struggle for women's equality, the struggle for reproductive freedom, and all the others that we continue to hold dear and that we continue to have to fight for. So our movement is no different. We are going through this patchwork struggle. The challenge for us is to get that next state, to really continue the momentum that's on our side. There are several states where we could have moved forward following Massachusetts, and for one reason or another, we came very, very close, but didn't make it all the way. Although, again, if you step back and just sort of look at the big picture, we have six states now that have not quite yet marriage, but something almost there, civil union, partnership, and none of that existed just 8 years ago. We have one state that has marriage. That didn't exist 5 years ago. To go from zero to nearly 20 to 30% of the American population covered by one form or another of statewide legal recognition for same-sex relationships is a historic and fast accomplishment. But, of course, it's not good enough, and that's why we have to keep going.
And I love how you really put it into perspective like that, because I think it really does help people to look at those sorts of figures or to reevaluate it in that way and really see, like you said, how far we've come in a mere, what you said, seven or eight years.
And, by the way, I will add, and I don't think this will surprise anyone, those 7 and 8 years have been some of the most challenging and difficult in American history. I mean, you look at the administration we have all endured over the last 7 years, there's really probably never been an administration more hostile to civil rights, to advancement, to gay people, to women's equality, and we have still made this tremendous progress with the wind in our face. Soon we're going to have the wind at our back, and we are going to move even faster.
Wow. Well, let's open it up a little bit and see if we have anyone that would like to ask a question about what we've already talked about or wants to make a comment. And I'm also going to look on the question and answer webcast here and see if you've got any here.
Mm-hmm.
Barb, this is Beth in Gulfport.
Beth, yes. Great. Yes.
Not surprisingly, I'm just full of questions and issues and whatnot. But, Evan, I'd like to tell you something that I heard at my church in the last few days that I'd never heard before and wondered if you had heard it, and if so, have you looked into it? A straight person there told me that by getting married, straight people automatically acquire close to 1,000 rights recognized under the law. And, of course, I've never done anything like that kind of count. I do know that with legal protections and stuff, many of us as lesbians have attempted to solidify some of those rights through powers of attorney and wills and other legal documents. But I wondered if you had ever heard a phrase like that or if you've ever looked at the broad spectrum of just exactly what it is, what rights are indeed secured by the state-recognized marriage.
Right, absolutely. Well, the number that I think your friend may have been referring to is 1,138, and that's the number of federal incidents of marriage. In other words, there are at least 1,138 federal laws that turn on whether people are married or not, and those range from such important questions as access to Social Security, which enables you to cover your loved ones after one of you dies, immigration rights, tax treatment under the tax laws, the ability to pool your resources as a family without being taxed on them, veterans benefits, access in some cases to medical care, and on and on and on, 1,138. And that's just the federal list. In addition, there are hundreds of legal protections and responsibilities that come to married couples and their kids under state law. which actually is the primary body of regulation that affects people's lives, because that regulates your day-to-day functioning as a family. And so your friend is absolutely right. There are obviously hundreds and hundreds and hundreds, well over 1,000 legal protections and responsibilities that same-sex couples are deprived of because they can't get married. And those are the tangible. There's also the intangible security and clarity and respect that comes to a family through being able to say that this person I'm sharing my life with is the primary person. It's my wife. It's the person I'm married to. And so being denied the freedom to marry really does hurt people in tangible and intangible ways in virtually every area of life, from birth to death, with taxes in between. And you can find, by the way, the list of all these kinds of protections and responsibilities in my book. There's an appendix at the back in Why Marriage Matters, but you can also find it free on the website at freedomtomarry.org.
So, Beth, did you have a response to that or another follow-up question?
Oh, I could follow up all night, but I won't do that right now. Anyway, I'll wait till you open it up more. But, Evan, I really appreciate you pinning that down for me, because it does sound like what she would have been referring to.
Yeah.
And I'm definitely headed to that website to take a look at it.
Excellent.
All right, and Evan, a lot of us on the call tonight are from Florida.
Uh-huh.
So we're in the midst of that amendment right now for November.
Mm-hmm.
And do you have any sage advice for us as we go forth on that?
Yeah, Florida, of course, is one of the states that is being targeted by the right-wing, anti-gay, anti-choice movement with a very cruel constitutional amendment. It's going to be on the ballot, and we have between now and November to persuade the people of Florida to reject this discrimination and not write discrimination into the Constitution. One of the most important ways to do that is by people getting visible and telling their stories, and not just assuming that the good people in their lives, people who love us, people who care for us, people we think of as pro-feminist or pro-gay or pro-tolerance, we can't just assume that they know what to do or that they've thought about this. We have to help them connect the dots. And that starts with people telling their stories, asking people to think about this, giving them some basic information like the questioner just brought up. We have to do that work of engaging people in conversation and telling our stories and making it local. We can't let people think they're getting some kind of freebie vote on how they feel about gays up in San Francisco or up in Massachusetts. They have to understand that this is about the two women who live across the street in their hometown in Florida, the women that they count on to care for their kids, the women that babysit, the women that are really good neighbors, the women at the PTA, the women who are their doctors or teachers. We have to tell our stories. We have to ask them for support. We have to arm them with the information that will help them rise to fairness. And we also have to get involved, frankly, in the campaign. People have an opportunity to sign up with groups like Equality Florida, or with an organization that's been set up to run a campaign in Florida to defeat this amendment called Florida Red and Blue. This is not something that people can just sit around and people can't let the clock run. We have to use every day between now and then to tell our stories, to help people connect the dots, and to defeat this thing.
Yeah, and I know down here it's been a thing as well that it will affect straight domestic partnerships.
Well, right. This amendment, like many of the anti-gay and anti-marriage amendments that have been pushed, goes far beyond just gay people and just marriage. It basically says that the only kind of family that will be honored, respected, protected under Florida law is the heterosexual man-woman family married through marriage. In other words, unmarried heterosexuals, seniors, same-sex couples all will fall outside the model that they say is the only good one. And this amendment is aimed at denying protections and responsibilities and rights to all kinds of other families, including ours.
Does anyone else have any questions in reference to any of this?
Well, I've got several.
I was just going to say, Victoria, I know I have them here, but do you want to go ahead, go for it.
Did you have one particular to pick out? I thought of some questions. One that, you know, in talking to people and telling our story, I have at least one friend, you know, probably even more than that, that that says, well, you know, I'm okay with you and, you know, with, you know, you being gay and all, and, you know, and it, you know, for quite some time I had a domestic partner and they were fine with that. But as far as, you know, when they get to the vote, they said, no, you know, I really can't vote for that marriage amendment because, you know, I just, yeah, you know, that's what my church says to do. Or that's what, yeah, I'm, you know, of a certain political group and they say to do it that way. So, you know, I'm stuck to do that. You know,
yeah,
sorry about your luck.
I'm sitting here laughing because if they say that, that's fine because they're saying they're not going to vote for it. Let them not vote, say no, right? Because that's what we want them to. But I know what you mean, seriously. Go ahead, Evan.
Well, I think I would say to people like that, I mean, if people bring up religion, what I think I would say to them is, look, I know you're a good person and you know me. You know what your religion teaches. Your religion teaches love. Your religion teaches judge not that you not be judged. Your religion teaches treat others as you would want to be treated. Your religion teaches you not to put obstacles in the path of people seeking to care for one another. And your religion also teaches render unto Caesar what is Caesar's and unto Jesus what is Jesus's. And thus the separation of church and state. And I think rather than getting into an argument over religion, what I would do is try to appeal to people's values, their sense of fairness, their sense of compassion, their sense of love, their sense of not judging other people, and try to put it very much in human terms, not let them get away with thinking this is some kind of abstract hypothetical, but rather that this is about real people and how do you treat real people. I think I would also explain to them that what the consequences of this amendment are, that it means that your family will be denied both those kinds of tangible protections that we talked about earlier, access to hospital visitation, the ability to pool resources and care for one another, the ability to make sure the kids you're raising have the best opportunities in life. You have to give them that information, and you also have to give them the information that this is not about religious marriage. This isn't about telling any church or synagogue or temple or mosque what they have to do. This is about whether the government should be discriminating against any one of us. So you have to give them that information, but ultimately you have to pitch it in terms of an appeal to their values, their sense of fairness, and their awareness that this affects real people.
You know, and I'm thinking too, Evan, in your book, you give some really good examples in there of, like you said, the real life person next door, how it's affecting their either their partnership or their family, or they have children, and the ways it really hurts people.
Right. Most people, you know, not all, but most people want to be fair, and most people will respond when given information and a chance to think it through. And part of the reason I said we can't waste any moment, we have to start using every day now between now and the election, and then until we've ended this discrimination, is that sometimes people don't get it the very first time. Sometimes they need time to digest it. They need to push past their discomfort. They need to be encouraged to push past their discomfort and think something through and then hear it again and then hear it again. And so by starting now, we have a chance to give them the drumbeat of information they need over the time it may take for them to absorb it. The other thing I would say is that defeating a bad constitutional amendment, as in a state like Florida, while important, is not good enough. Because if we do succeed in defeating the bad constitutional amendment, the people in Florida still have no legal rights, no legal protections. They still can't get married. They still don't have any kind of partnership recognition. They still don't have access to health care and immigration rights. All we will have done is defeat another layer of discrimination. Now, don't get me wrong, that's a good thing to do, and we need to do that. But we also need to aim higher. We need to really envision the ability to persuade the reachable middle and bring the young people who are with us into the political debate in a way that helps bring down these discriminatory laws and open up the law for all of us. And we've shown that we can do that over the last several years. We need to now really pick up the pace, support one another, work in all 50 states, create the climate that allows some states to get there first, and that'll help pull the other states along. And our work is not done until we've ended this exclusion in all 50 states.
Wow. Can't you guys hear how he's just so involved and passionate about this? I'm wondering if you would tell the story that I heard you when you on the Google thing when you went to New York, the Google office up there, and told about the interracial, the struggle to change that and how long that took and what. Yeah, I thought that was a really good corollary to what we're going through.
Sure. Well, actually, it's very apt because this year, 2008, we celebrate the 60th anniversary of the first court ever to strike down race discrimination in marriage. In other words, for most of American history, from 1776 until 1948, it was the law in most states that people could not marry someone of, quote-unquote, the wrong race. And the majority accepted that. The majority believed that was right, and religion defended that. And people thought that's just the way it has to be, and it's not going to change. And it wasn't until 1948 that even one court had the courage to strike down those race restrictions on marriage. Finally, in 1948, one court went first, and that was the California Supreme Court. And it was a vote of 4-3, so it was very, very close. Mm. When the courts became the first to strike down race restrictions in marriage, it said, quote, "The essence of the right to marry is the freedom to join in marriage with the person you choose." And the reason for that, the court said, is that, and again, I'm paraphrasing, but this is pretty much the language of the ruling, the court said, human beings are bereft of worth and dignity by a legal doctrine of discrimination that treats them as if they were interchangeable like trains. If you can't marry the person you love, it's not like you can just catch the next one. You're being deprived of the person who's irreplaceable to you.
Wow. Mm.
And the court was right, of course, when it made that ruling. But at the time, in 1948, the polls showed 90% of the American people disagreed. 90% of the American people were opposed to ending race discrimination in marriage, but still that court had the courage and it struck it down. It took another 19 years of battling after that historic court ruling before the question of race restrictions in marriage came again to the United States Supreme Court, which had gotten it wrong previously. And then after those 19 years of battling, in 1967, in the best-named case ever, Loving versus Virginia, the United States Supreme Court struck down race restrictions on marriage throughout the country.
Wow.
So it really took almost all of our country's history, and it wasn't until as recently as 1967, just 40-some years ago, we celebrated the anniversary last year, before we put an end to those restrictions that, again, the majority thought was fine, okay, it had to be that way. The same kinds of opponents of equality as we see today beat their drums and attacked the activist judges, quote unquote, and they claimed that the sky was going to fall, and they talked about unnatural and degenerate unions and all the kind of stuff we see here them throwing out now. They all said then. And when the United States Supreme Court struck down these race restrictions in marriage just as recently as 1967, the poll showed 70% of the American people opposed interracial marriage.
Wow.
Now, if you look at how we're doing in our civil rights struggle on this battlefield of marriage, we're actually doing much better. The polls are much, much closer. We are we have about 40-some percent of the American people who now have come to understand that excluding same-sex couples from marriage is wrong. And opposition hovers in the sort of 50s at the moment. Not good enough yet, but far better than it was 10 years ago. And, of course, young people, as I mentioned earlier, are overwhelmingly with us. We just need to bring them in and empower them. And we need to keep telling our stories because that's what moves the reachable middle. And, by the way, here we are on the 60th anniversary of that first court decision, the California Supreme Court decision that I mentioned earlier, and we now stand before the California Supreme Court. The court is on March 4th is going to hear arguments in the cases involving lesbian and gay couples who were denied the freedom to marry. And they have the opportunity this year to hand down the same kind of historic civil rights ruling that was part of their legacy as they did in 1948. But it's our job throughout the country to create the climate that signals to those judges that they can do the right thing.
So you're saying not only can we really be pushing this year to get a second state, it's even possible that the Supreme Court could rule.
No, I'm sorry. It's the California Supreme Court.
Right, the state. Okay.
So that would be the possible second state.
Right.
We're also in front of the high court and awaiting a decision any day in Connecticut, where gay and lesbian advocates and defenders, the same group that did the Massachusetts case, joined by their state partner, Love Makes a Family in Connecticut, are representing couples in front of the Connecticut Supreme Court. We're also going before the Iowa Supreme Court this year in a case brought by Lambda Legal. So we're in front of three state Supreme Court courts this year in cases involving women and men seeking the freedom to marry the partner they love. Meanwhile, legislatures from California to Connecticut and many other states in between, New Jersey, New York, Illinois, Washington, Maryland, are all grappling with this question as well. We're not just in court, we're in the legislatures. And most importantly, we're live and active and engaged in the court of public opinion, and that's where everybody can really make a difference. Court cases and legislative battles are not won just by lawyers and lobbyists. They are won by all of us creating the climate, the expectation, the sense, the understanding that enables those decision makers to do the right thing. And so that's why it's just so crucial that everyone turn to the people in their lives and talk with them about this, because that's what builds the momentum for the freedom to marry and, more importantly, for the full equality that we all deserve.
So if somebody's listening tonight and they're really excited by what you're saying, what would you advise them to do next in terms of getting involved more with Freedom to Marry, or how they can handle these conversations with other people? How can they get support for
right.
that?
Well, first of all, it's important to understand there's not a one-size-fits-all way of getting involved. Some people are joiners. There are plenty of organizations for them to plug in with, and the most important ones to plug in with are the groups that are working in their states and their communities. It's also good to link up with some of the national groups that can provide resources, but the most important work is done state by state, locally, where you are. So people can go to freedomtomarry.org and go to the state partners page and find some of the suggestions for whom they can join up with if they're joiners. If people would rather do something on their own, there are also many, many ways to get involved. And the most important one is by talking to the people in your life, telling your story, explaining why this matters to you, getting a few of the talking points, some of the information, and being able to help them open their minds, help them think about it, and then help them get involved. And again, on freedomtomarry.org, there's a whole section on the website called Get Involved, and it gives lists of ways people can comfortably find their best voice, their best ability to give people action items, action ideas, how to do things, how to have a conversation about marriage, how to have a conversation with people that are more challenging, how to organize an event, as well as, of course, writing checks, sending publications, and getting people involved. And again, all these tools exist. And they exist on the freedomtomarry.org website, but freedomtomarry.org will also point you to other organizations in your area, gay and non-gay, that you can choose which one is best for you. There's another great site that I would urge people to take a look at, because it's really kind of the state of the art as far as how to talk with non-gay people about this, and it's called letcaliforniaring.org. It's the public education website that's been created with a really terrific ad that is now going to be running for the first time on television for several weeks in part of California to begin shaping public opinion for the court, and all kinds of other tools and action kits and talking points. And that's another good place for people to start. So freedomtomarry.org, letcaliforniaring.org, and through Freedom to Marry, the various state-by-state and national organizations, gay and non-gay, that people can comfortably plug into. And all of these have resources, action items, talking points. And then, of course, there's also my book, which people are welcome to read because it's written as an explanation for how to help you find your voice and answer the questions and have the conversation with the people in your lives, your mom, your roommates, your friends, your neighbors, your coworkers, your other family members.
Really, it's about acting locally again, isn't it?
It is. It's about each one of us finding the way we can use our voice, find our voice, and reach the people around us, whether more actively or even from the privacy of your own home. There are ways to do it, and everyone can do something. You just have to plug in, choose what's right for you, challenge yourself a little bit, get the help, because you don't have to reinvent the wheel. There are tools, there are action kits and so on there. And then you have to commit to making a difference and not just waiting for change to waft in, but instead we can really bend history and make this happen in our lifetime the way we want it to happen.
Victoria, I think he covered most of your questions.
Yeah, somewhere along the line, he got most of them there.
He did. You have, go ahead.
Yeah, and most of the, you know, that was really good. Yeah, I really thank you for all those great answers. I think part of the thing, too, is that shouldn't it be more, you know, I'm glad that we're seeing a lot more action going legislative, but
mm-hmm.
One of the things that I've heard is, well, if it's, you know, anything that has to do with other people's freedoms and rights, yeah, you know, it never goes through votes. It's always gone through the legislature. We didn't vote on civil rights. Why would we vote on, you know, on this issue?
Well, you're absolutely right that the idea of putting a vulnerable minority's rights up to a vote is really quite un-American. But nevertheless, the right wing is pushing this campaign, and they've been successful in stampeding people into having these votes state by state by state. Eventually, all of these anti-gay, anti-choice constitutional amendments are going to be struck down. They're all going to be swept away. But that's only going to happen after we create, as I said earlier, this patchwork in which we have some states having moved in the right direction so that people get a chance to take a deep breath, look at places like Massachusetts, like Canada, like South Africa, like Spain, and hopefully soon, like California, like Connecticut, like New Jersey, like Washington State, like Maryland, and all the other places where we're moving things forward, and they'll get a chance to look at those places and say, you know what? The sky didn't fall. Families are actually doing better. These kids are better off. No one was hurt. And meanwhile, hearts and minds continue to open because of the work we do in all 50 states, and we get people to revisit these questions, or we ultimately create a climate in which courts can strike them down. Now, like in any civil rights struggle, be it the women's movement or the struggles for racial justice or the labor movement, whatever it may be, these things take time. They just don't happen overnight. But on the other hand, we also know from those movements in history and the movements that are going on that we can do this. We can make change. We can see things happen. You know, we talked earlier about the race restrictions on marriage. But the fact of the matter is marriage has always been a battleground on which larger questions of what kind of country we're going to have been contested. And the race discrimination example is a very powerful one, but an equally powerful one is the struggle for women's equality. For much of American history, women who married men were actually lost legal rights. In fact, not only did they lose legal rights, they actually lost their legal identity as a full person. They became the property of their husband. And that was the law. But we changed it, battle by battle, state by state, in a patchwork over a much longer time than actually we're going to have to fight as gay people. We changed that law, and we through the battlefield of marriage, we changed the way in which women were treated. When I was a young attorney myself, I actually worked on a case that ended what was called the marital rape exemption. The marital rape exemption was part, at one time, of the law of every state. It was part of the so-called definition of marriage. And what it said was that a man could not be prosecuted for raping his wife because he's entitled to take what belongs to him. That was the way people thought. That was the definition of marriage. It was defended by religious authorities. It was considered to be part of the natural definition of marriage. But we changed it. We changed it by educating, by marching, by talking, and by litigating in the right case at the right time. And as I said, this is not just something that happened in Civil War days. This happened in our lifetime. I worked on the case myself. And it wasn't, by the way, in Florida. It wasn't in Utah. It wasn't in Alabama, you know, the states that people think of as more challenging and not the ones that usually lead the advance for equality. It was in New York. And it was in 1984. So as recently as 1984, we had this discriminatory, sexist understanding of what marriage ought to be and how women ought to be treated. But we changed it.
Barb, this is Beth. Can I say something?
Go ahead.
Victoria, you mentioned going through the legislature to secure our rights. That is true. That's happened a lot. But even more often, it's been the courts that have been willing to look at the constitutions and interpret them along the lines of our inherent rights, that the state has no right or ability to limit. And when Evan talks about these things being overturned, that's where that will probably happen, is in the courts rather than in the legislature. But if we wait for the courts to do this sort of thing, we'll be waiting a very long time. And I'm almost 60 myself and would rather not wait, you know, for obvious reasons. I think that getting active now, if you're at all the kind of person to do it, even if getting active just means writing a check, it's tremendously important here in Florida. And the two organizations that we've mentioned most, that is Fairness for All Families and Florida Red and Blue, are both already up and going. As Evan said, you don't have to reinvent the wheel to do this. And, you know, they're absolutely looking for volunteers. They're looking for people who can help them with raise the money for the media campaigns, either of those organizations. And you can find them on the web as long as you remember to put .org instead of .com as you're looking for them and everything. It's hugely important. And one of the things that my church has recently decided to do is to not only take a position against this amendment, but to work with other churches of our same denomination all around so that we can get churches from, say, 6 or 7 counties all at the same time passing congregational resolutions fighting against this so-called Marriage Protection Amendment. And one final thing on that, the reason it is being presented to us by vote as Marriage Protection Amendment, it's twofold. One is that we can't always count on the majority of people to protect the minority's civil rights. You know, there have been plenty of times in our land when whites would have defeated any civil rights legislation by popular vote for blacks. And obviously it's the courts who've stood there and forced us to face the realities of what rights are. And the other is the reason it's being an amendment to the Constitution is that the right-wingers and quite frankly, some of the Republicans, because it's the Republicans who are funding most of this in Florida, are hopeful that by getting it added to our state constitution, the courts will be more reluctant to overturn it. Whereas if it passed through the regular legislature, just as a regular law, courts are accustomed to overturning those things if they fly in the face of basic human rights. But when it's a part of a document called a constitution, the courts are much more reluctant to overturn that because it would have to go beyond the actual letter of the Florida Constitution itself and find those rights some other way. So it would,
in the federal
Okay. That's it. I'll shut up now, Evan.
No, I totally agree with everything you said. I think the fact of the matter is, as in any human rights struggle and movement, we have to advance through the courts, we have to advance through the legislature, and at least defensively, we have to be prepared to fight at the ballot box. And We have to really do all of them. And the secret ingredient that is the uniter for all of those is by engaging the people around us, by talking about our lives, by creating more public understanding, we make it easier for courts to do their job. We encourage legislators to show more courage, and we're able to persuade voters to defeat bad things and ultimately do good things. So the ingredient of talking to people and getting involved in the campaigns you just mentioned, as well as the affirmative organizations, churches, gay groups at the local level, the national organizations, non-gay ally groups like the NAACP, like the ACLU, like the National Organization for Women, by getting involved in all these things and telling our stories and making it local and really helping move public opinion, that's what makes it possible for us to win in all the different methodologies.
Well, you know, this is Barb, and I'm, you know, from the non-lawyer perspective here, as both of you are or have been, it just looks like you said, this patchwork is happening. I mean, they may be putting up roadblocks, but it's just slowing this down. I mean, we can't sit back and just expect it to change, but, you know, ultimately I think we've got our eyes on the prize, and it's going to happen. It's just a matter of when.
Yeah, I absolutely agree with that. If you look at, for example, all of the Democratic presidential candidates this year, literally all of them, supported either marriage or all but marriage. And actually, if you analyze carefully the positions of both Senator Obama and Senator Clinton, you could actually show that even though they're not yet willing to say they're for marriage, they're not against it. And you can show that by their own quoted words. And even on the Republican side, the spectrum is obviously much, much worse. But even there, there are gradations. And you have candidates like the current front runner, John McCain, who has said he opposes a federal constitutional amendment that would deny gay people the freedom to marry, even though he is not a consistent champion of our rights. And that's on both sides of the spectrum, even with the differences and the range that I just described, that's much further along than we were 10 years ago, 15 years ago. There clearly is momentum in the right direction. Just over the last weekend, I was in California speaking at the big event for Equality California, which is the statewide organization in that state. It was held in City Hall, which, where you may remember a few years ago, the city of San Francisco was marrying thousands of same-sex couples until the court ordered an end to it, until the court case could go forward. The first couple who got legally married there were Del Martin and Phyllis Lyon, who, you know, of course, are heroes to all of us. And one of the things that Del and Phyllis said when the court took away their marriage and forced them to go back to court in the case that's now in front of the California Supreme Court, one of the things they said was, look, at our age, we don't have the luxury of time. We want to live to see this. And so you're absolutely right. It's not whether we're going to win, it's when. But when does make a big difference. And all of us have the opportunity to make that when a lot sooner if we get involved now.
Wow. Well, listen, guys, we have just a couple more minutes. Does anyone else have any other questions or comments they'd like to share with Evan?
Well, I've got another one, and that's with the what I call the younger generation of gay and lesbians who take the perspective that, well, yeah, it's the way it is. The way it is, the way it is, and I really don't have time to worry about it. Yeah, you know, it would be nice to have some sort of a protection, but, you know, I'll just live without it. Now, how do we convince those people to get involved?
Well, actually, my experience with younger people, and obviously, you know, you can generalize, and there are, you know, quote-unquote good younger people and bad younger people and good older people and bad older people. But my experience actually is most younger people, thanks really to the work that many of us have done over the last decade or so, building on much work before that, my experience is that younger people today actually have a very different sense of entitlement and expectation and sense of self-esteem and confidence about themselves, and they believe they should have the freedom to marry. And most non-gay young people don't even think it's a big deal and absolutely think their gay friends should be able to marry. The challenge is not so much persuading them that they should have this or that it's the right thing. It's getting them involved, helping them feel empowered, helping them feel like their work, their energy, their talent, their voice, their engagement will make a difference. And one of the things I think that's been very exciting this year so far in this election cycle, which can also be a distraction from some of the work that we need to do because people are understandably very engaged with that. But one of the things that's been exciting about it is seeing young people and in fact, so many people really engage in getting into the political work and getting into the process and turning out in record numbers to vote in the primaries and so on. And I think that's a really good thing for us. We just have to stick with it, engage those people, harness them, help them, give them the information, remind them that this needs to be part of the conversation, and I think that will carry us very far.
Well, you know, and I think as older people, a lot of us on the call, you know, we have a certain power with them, a good power that I don't think sometimes we realize that we can share with them why this is so important. We have that longer-range perspective, and if you have a close relationship with a younger person, you can really make an impact, I think.
I think the real challenge with younger people, but also, you know, quite frankly, with people of our generation and others, is it's not even so much persuading them of what the right thing is. It's persuading them that their involvement makes a difference and helping them find a way to add their voice, to take action, and kind of nagging and pushing and coaxing and helping them to do that and not just assuming that they're going to do it or and not just assuming that they're not going to do it. We just really have to make an effort to help and push people to make a difference and get involved. And I think many of the people that we have now really actually are on our side. We just have to get them active.
Yeah, I agree. All right, everyone. We have one last item of business here, and that's I always give away a gift, a prize for the folks on the live call tonight and on the webcast. And I'm giving away one of my CDs tonight. And I have selected Ebby from Colorado as the winner for that CD tonight. So a handful to a clapping for Ebby there. Ebby, congratulations.
Thank you. Yay. Thank you. I just had to unmute myself.
What's that?
I said thank you. I had to unmute myself. I wasn't sure if you could hear me. So
that's no problem. But we, you know, Evan, thank you so, so much for coming on the call. I know that, I mean, every time I've listened to you, and tonight included, I'm just blown away by how passionate you are about this, how I think you probably talk about this in your sleep because you just really know the subject matter and the way you present it gives me lots of hope and gives me a refreshed way of looking at it and realizing that every little bit helps and my part counts and I'm sure everyone else on the call feels the same way tonight.
Well, thank you. I really appreciate the opportunity, and I really believe we are winning, and we have this within our reach. And if we get that second state this year by doing the work we need to do and move public opinion a few points over, next year, especially after this next election, is going to bring us a whole new field of opportunity, and we're really going to see this move very quickly.
And, folks, you can go on the webcast link page there on the donate button to go to freedomtomarry.org. And encourage your friends to go there and look at the site and donate. I'm sorry, did I hear someone trying to say something? I guess not. Okay. Well, listen, I think that's it. Right at the top hour exactly. Please join us next week for more live and lively talk about lesbian dating, mating, and relating. This is Barb Elgin with Coach Sasso's Live Podcast. And have a good evening and a great week.
Thank you.
Thank you. Happy Freedom to Marry Week.
Thank you.
Thank you both, Barb, and to you, Evan. It's been a wonderful talk.
Really?
Yeah.
Thank you
a
lot.
The moderator has disconnected. The call will now end. Welcome to the conferencing service. Please enter your conference ID followed by the pound sign.